army releases footage of a retaliatory attack it carried out on Saudi Arabia's Al Wadiya training camp last week. The World Health Organization is warning that the number of COVID-19 cases in Europe is surging again after more than 2 months of decline. Indonesia reports over 500 new COVID-related deaths and nearly 25,000 new infection cases. This is World News with me, Behrouz Najafi. It's good to have you with us. Now, top story this hour, Yemeni army is saying that it's released footage of an attack on a military target in the Saudi Najran province last week. Army spokesman Yahya Saria said that the operation was performed using 10 Qassam 2K drones. On June 24th, Yemeni armed forces targeted a military training camp in the Saudi town of Al Wadiya. The attack left dozens of Saudi forces dead. Yemeni armed forces say that their retaliatory raids are in response to the deadly war that Saudi Arabia has been waging on their country. Tens of thousands of Yemenis, mostly civilians, have been killed in the Saudi onslaught that began in March 2015. Political commentator Kevin Barrett says that the case of the Saudi war in Yemen is pretty much like the U.S. onslaught on Vietnam, which finally turned into a quagmire for American forces.
It's been called the Saudi Vietnam, and there are many parallels between the Saudi misadventure in Yemen and the American disaster in Vietnam. And one of the parallels is the way that the official story put out by the Americans in the case of Vietnam and the Saudis in the case of Yemen is that they're really trying to hide just how terrible a disaster this has been. The Americans notoriously lied and grossly underrepresented their own losses and grossly overrepresented the Vietnamese losses when they were fighting that disastrous war. Mm-hmm. And likewise, the Saudis appear to be trying to cover up the fact that the Yemeni successes against Saudi Arabia, including these strikes deep inside the Saudi territory, the Saudis don't want to admit it. So what they always do, just like the Americans would lie in Vietnam and say that, oh, we totally demolished the enemy and wiped out thousands of them and so on, when actually it was the Americans who'd taken the bad hit. Likewise, the Saudis, they always kind of do what the Israelis do when they say that, oh, we shot down all the missiles that were coming at us and, you know, our missile defense system is working and so on and so forth. And then the Yemenis, a few days later, released the footage showing that that wasn't the case and that actually the strike hit a Saudi military target, killed Saudi soldiers.
Speaking of Yemen, the people there have held a protest in front of the UN office in the capital, Sana'a. They demand the lifting of the siege and urge the international community to take action.
Yemen's Ministry of Electricity held a sit-in protest in front of the United Nations office in the capital Sana'a to call all the international community to step in and to pressure Saudi Arabia to stop detaining Yemeni oil vessels. The ministry said it is unable to generate power anymore due to the lack of fuel.
Electricity is an essential service and has nothing to do with any political conflicts. The power sector in Yemen has been heavily affected since the first moment of the war. The SaudiNet coalition has directly targeted all electric power plants, and this is a great tragedy for us. The UN has not done anything to end the suffering of Yemenis. We demand the lifting of the siege and releasing the oil ships so we can generate electricity again.
At the same place, Yemeni children organized a gallery for the drawings. The gallery was named The U.S. Kills Our Childhood and exhibited children's drawings that show the suffering of Yemeni children due to the ongoing conflict.
We participated in this protest to tell the United Nations, which classified Ansarullah in its blacklist of groups violating children's rights. We Yemenis demand our rights like any other people, on top of which is the lifting of the siege imposed on us by Saudi Arabia.
How many fathers and mothers have lost their children? This is a massive crime. This is tyranny. We are little children. We have no fault.
Saudi Arabia, backed by Washington, launched a devastating war on the impoverished country in March 2015, killing tens of thousands of civilians, including women and children, and imposing an all-out blockade. Yemenis have held hundreds of protests here in front of the United Nations office, but the international body has not yet taken any strict measures to end the suffering of the millions of Yemenis. That is why the UN describes the situation in Yemen as the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Now let's take a look at some COVID news. The number of cases and deaths in Europe keeps rising, and that's while the continent is struggling to cope with the pandemic. Britain registered 28,000 new cases, the highest daily tally since late January. And also that brought the caseload there to more than 4.8 million. There are also 128,000 deaths. Russia reported 672 deaths in the span of 24 hours, setting a record in number of fatalities for the third day in a row. The country is battling a surge in infections driven by the highly contagious Delta variant and worsened by a lagging vaccine rollout. The World Health Organization says that COVID-19 cases are on the rise in Europe again after 2 months of decline, warning that a new wave of infections.
A 10-week decline in number of COVID-19 cases in the 53 countries in the WHO European region has come to an end. Last week, the number of cases rose by 10%, driven by increased mixing, travel, gatherings, and easing of social restrictions.
In an online press conference, Hans Kluge urged citizens and MPs to remain disciplined in order to prevent a new wave in the European region. He cautioned that a new surge comes in the context of rising cases of the Delta variant, first spotted in India. The WHO official noted the vaccine rollout is too slow to offer necessary protection. A report by the EU's Disease Control Agency estimates that the more contagious Delta variant could account for 90% of new cases in the EU by the end of August. Leading experts are warning further neglect of young people in the European Union could lead to the bloc's demise. The unprecedented economic crisis in the EU, compounded by COVID-19, has been debated at an event in Brussels. Jerome Hughes has more.
Aside from the enormous death toll, COVID-19 has wreaked economic havoc across the 27-nation EU. The Brussels Economic Forum, the European Commission's flagship annual event focusing on the economy, has just heard that young people have been disproportionately impacted.
We have a whole generation of youth that have had their education and their early labour market careers disrupted. So we really have to pay attention to those groups and try to move forward better.
Apparently, the EU is ill-equipped to create jobs because it's behind the curve when it comes to the digital technology sector.
Before, we were just lagging behind the United States and Japan at some stage. Mm-hmm. Now we are lagging behind the US and China.
Education systems in the EU need to be reformed so that young people can receive training for quality jobs, it has been suggested.
If you're from the north of Europe or the south of Europe, the east of the west, young people desire one thing. They want to build their future. They want to build a family. And this comes with a quality job.
The EU's handling of the coronavirus pandemic was criticized at the Brussels Economic Forum. A senior official recalls Russian medical supply trucks rolling into his home country of Italy in February 2020.
They had written in the trucks from Russia with love. And that in the same weeks, we had export bans of medical equipment among European countries.
The EU's slow response to the pandemic has economic consequences, experts point out.
The United States, earlier than Europe, made huge progress on vaccines as soon as Joe Biden came into office. It also put forward an even bigger economic recovery package.
The event heard that Western nations rely too heavily on the arms industry and financial services sector when it comes to growing GDP. That's the total monetary value of any given country.
In contrast, imagine a good society, a harmonious one, where people feel safe, where they are healthy.
Contributors reminded the Economic Forum the EU was still struggling from the 2008 financial crisis when COVID-19 arrived. They warn if citizens are not treated better this time, the EU will fall apart. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
The African Union blasts the European Union for its delay in delivering COVID-19 vaccines. The official in charge of procuring COVID-19 vaccines for Africa says that Europe has not given a single dose to Africa. This drive, Ms. Iwa also criticized COVAX, saying that a global vaccine distribution initiative has failed to deliver the jabs it promised. Ms. Iwa also criticized donors for not keeping up their funding pledges. Africa has the lowest vaccination rate of any continent. Coronavirus cases have been rising sharply in that continent as it's battling an aggressive third wave. The World Health Organization says that infections there are doubling every 3 weeks. Africa has reported more than 5.5 million cases. Indonesia has reported a record number of new daily infections and deaths. It's registered some 25,000 infections on Thursday, bringing the caseload to more than 2.2 million. There were also 500 new deaths, taking the fatalities to around 59,000. Indonesia earlier announced emergency restrictions in parts of the country to curb the fresh peak in the disease. In the meantime, Bangladesh began deploying army troops to enforce a strict lockdown amid a record spike in COVID-19 cases driven by the Delta variant. Under the new week-long restrictions, no one will be allowed to go out except in case of an emergency during the lockdown period. All offices and transportation will also be shut. Bangladesh has seen a record surge in cases this week. Chinese President Xi Jinping says that the era of Beijing being bullied is gone forever. He was speaking at an event marking the 110th anniversary of the founding of the Communist Party.
The Chinese people will never allow any foreign forces to bully, oppress, or enslave us. Whoever wants to do so will surely face bloodshed in front of a great wall of steel built by more than 1.4 billion Chinese people.
She said that the Communist Party has restored national pride. The Chinese president hailed what he called the irreversible rise of China. He also underlined that his country has achieved its first centenary goal of building a moderately well-off society and eliminating absolute poverty. He added that China is striving toward its second goal of turning into a modern and powerful socialist country in all respects. Pledging to build up the military, the president said that he remains committed to the reunification of Taiwan. He also stressed the autonomy held by Hong Kong and Macau. Political commentator Einar Tangen believes that China has turned into a powerful country in the past 100 years following the end of the imperial rule there.
100 years ago, China was basically an occupied land. Colonial powers, the French, the United States, Britain, etc., Germany had occupied and taken concessions because they demanded that they had the right to sell drugs to China, opium. And today, China is no longer under any kind of domination, although it continues to be under threat from those same colonial powers, more so the U.S. than anybody else. I think she made a statement to the party. This was a unique event in that it was a 100th anniversary, but it was not a national holiday, nor did he choose to have a great big military parade or do anything. The people that were in Tiananmen Square were invited guests, mostly diplomats, and also party members. The message was directly to the party, although the people were listening. It talked about what China has done over the last 100 years under Communist Party and what it intends to do.
Now, Pakistan has snapped the U.S. call to downgrade its ties with its northern neighbor China. Beijing has invested tens of billions of dollars in the Pakistani energy and construction sectors and built a port linking China with the rest of the world, which Washington opposes. Javed Rana reports from Islamabad.
China is building up nearly 3,000-kilometer-long network of roads, railway lines, and investing tens of billions of U.S. dollars in Pakistan's energy and infrastructure projects under its mega Belt and Road global initiative. The major road infrastructure links western China to deep water port in southwest of Pakistan, 75 kilometers east of Iran, at the top of Arabian Sea. The U.S. feels threatened over expansion of Chinese economic influence in the rest of the world through Gwadar Port, which also serves as an alternative option for Beijing in the event of military blockade of Chinese Navy in South China Sea by the U.S. and its allies. The U.S. has been pressurizing Pakistan into shelving Chinese mega projects, calling it a debt trap. Washington has been struggling hard to win over Islamabad in its what appears to be a cold war with Beijing over growing Chinese economic influence in the world.
Pakistan thinks that it is very unfair for the U.S. or other powers, Western powers, for countries like us to take sides. Why do we have to take sides?
It's not going to happen that if Pakistan is, if there's pressure put on Pakistan to change its relationship or downgrade its relationship with China. It won't happen. Our relationship between the two countries, no matter what pressure is put on us, is not going to change.
The unprecedented cold shouldering to the U.S. has followed a series of Pakistan's policy decisions to no longer get itself involved in any U.S.-driven military conflict across the region. Islamabad has outrightly rejected the U.S. request to set up military bases in Pakistan. The American CIA chief, William Byrne, who was on a secret visit to Pakistan a few weeks ago, was reportedly snubbed upon his request to see Prime Minister to reconsider his decision on military bases. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
Hopes have been raised of summer holidays in Europe for fully vaccinated Britons as a deal with Brussels on COVID passports neared completion and Germany failed to convince popular destinations to put an emergency brake on UK visitors. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian columnists Daniel Boffey and Sam Jones. The piece is titled UK and Brussels near deal on COVID passports to boost holiday hopes. Hopes have been raised of summer holidays in Europe for fully vaccinated Britons as a deal with Brussels on COVID passports neared completion and Germany failed to convince popular destinations to put an emergency brake on UK visitors. Restrictions on travel are tightening across the European continent, for tourists coming from the United Kingdom who have not had two jabs, owing to concerns over the highly transmissible Delta variant of the coronavirus, now dominant in Britain. Portugal announced on Monday, 28th of June, that people unable to prove full vaccination status would face 14 days in quarantine. Spain's Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez said Britons travelling to the Balearic Islands would need to show either a negative PCR test or proof that they have been fully vaccinated to avoid having to self-isolate. From Wednesday, 30th of June, the Balearics will be on the UK government's green list of countries from which travellers will not need to quarantine when they return home. But for travellers from the United Kingdom who have had both doses of an approved vaccine, the prospect of a relatively normal summer break appears brighter, with popular destinations loath to shut the doors on those who are unlikely to be infectious. According to the latest data, 61.9% of UK adults are now fully vaccinated, and 84.4% have had at least a first dose of the vaccine. The German government, which has enforced a 14-day quarantine on all tourists from Britain since 26th of May, is yet to convince countries more dependent on tourism that stringent quarantine requirements on all travellers from the United Kingdom are necessary. The prospects for the fully vaccinated appeared all the better on Monday as it emerged that talks were advancing well on the mutual recognition of an NHS app and the European Union's Green Digital Certificate, ensuring that travellers can prove their status. The apps allow border controls to scan a QR code to confirm the vaccination status of the traveller and provide free passage. A European Commission spokesperson said there are talks ongoing at the technical level which are progressing well and going in the right direction. This is particularly because the technical system architecture of the European Union and the United Kingdom are aligned. The talks are ongoing. I have no specific timeline to announce. It's good that the United Kingdom is now working with us towards that goal. A UK government spokesperson said unlocking international travel was vitally important and that officials were seeking to ensure certification is introduced in a way that works for everyone. There are concerns in the UK government that a two-tier system is emerging in which those who are unvaccinated face a disadvantage in trying to get away for a holiday. But owing to the spread of the Delta variant of the coronavirus, that outcome appears unavoidable. At a meeting of a group of European Union diplomats coordinating the Union's integrated political crisis response on Monday, a briefing from the bloc's Disease Prevention and Control Agency noted the highly transmissible nature of the Delta variant. Diplomats were told that the variant would probably account for 90% of cases by the end of August. The rate of vaccination, however, offers hope that the link between infection and hospitalization and deaths will be broken in time. Diplomatic sources said it was likely that the level of infection would in future not be the key factor in deciding whether non-essential travel from the United Kingdom or elsewhere by the unvaccinated is permitted. Sources said the German representative at the meeting said Berlin would be tightening its policy on UK travellers. The German Chancellor Angela Merkel warned fellow leaders at a summit last week that the bloc was not doing well in relation to restricting the spread of variants found in non-EU countries.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. We invite you to listen to a short speech by Dr. Shomali.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. La hawla wa la quwwata illa billah al-Ali al-Azim. People who don't choose to turn towards God and remember Him, sometimes it's because they don't want, they have made this decision that they don't want to remember Him, they want to turn away from Him. A'rad. Some people know they didn't do deliberate decision not to turn towards God. They are not very determined, they are weak in their willpower, they are heedless, and many people fall in this category. But Mu'minin are people who decide and want, actually. They want. Maybe their niyyah is better than their action. But niyyatul mu'min khayrun min amali, one dimension, different dimensions. But one dimension is that maybe in the reality, maybe in practice, they are not able to fulfill what they wanted and what they had intention for. So their niyyah should be better than their action. So, mu'minin who want to remember God, sometimes they may not remember Him in reality as a practice because of heedlessness, because of weaknesses. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, إِنَّ الَّذِينَ اتَّقَوْا إِذَا مَسَّهُمْ طَائِفٌ مِنَ الشَّيْطَانِ تَذَكَّرُوا فَإِذَا هُمْ مُبْصِرُونَ. It shows that even muttaqin, good muttaqin, still may sometimes fail to remember God, and therefore shaitan, some roaming shaitans who go everywhere, you know, to find perhaps who is heedless to attack, they can touch them. مَسَّهُمْ طَائِفٌ مِنَ الشَّيْطَانِ تَذَكَّرُوا. Because they wanted to remember God, but they were unfortunately heedless. And therefore shaitan or satans touch them, but they don't let them get into their heart, get deeper. They all of a sudden تَذَكَّرُوا, they remember. And perhaps the difference between tazakara and zakara is that tazakara is showing that they make some efforts, and it means they want to remember, or you know, or there is a maybe a reminder from God for them, and they receive it, they accept it. Tazakaru, not zakaru. تذكروا. And then فإذا هم مبصرون. It's like someone who has eyes but was looking somewhere else, or closed the eyes, all of a sudden something was coming, a threat, he opens the eyes and realizes. Or you know, maybe sometimes you know, you are driving and you are very sleepy, and of course you shouldn't drive when you are sleepy, but you know, sometimes happens, all of a sudden you have your eyes, you know, close, and you open, and you see, oh, there is danger. So, every creature should turn towards God. Some do it always. Some are supposed to do it by choice, and those who do it by choice are those that may fail, either because they don't want, or they want, but they become heedless. So, we have then the whole universe present before Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Allah is Nuru Samawati wal Ard. So He is the absolute, unlimited source of light. Now, this Samawat wal Ard and whatever is in them, they are facing Him, they are submissive to Him, they are remembering Him. Only human beings and jinns may remember, may not remember. By choice or by the flesh. For the rest of creation, we don't use dhikr. Although they are turning towards God, but we don't call them dhakir. We say they do tasbih. We say they do hamd. We say they are taslim to God. Aslam. But we don't technically say they are doing dhikr. They are zakir. Why? Because zikr is for someone who has choice. May remember, may not remember. Either chooses to remember or chooses not to remember or doesn't make any choice and by ghafla doesn't remember. Because till zikr becomes your permanent condition, you need attention to do zikr. But if zikr becomes your permanent condition, all the time you are remembering Him, even when you are sleeping. الَّذِينَ يَذْكُرُونَ اللَّهَ قِيَامًا وَقُعُودًا وَعَلَىٰ جُنُوبِهِمْ. It seems that these people are the people that zikr has become part of their nature. This is their tabi'at thaniya. This is the second nature. They have made this second nature. Zikr has become part of their fabric. They are, as we said, muqarrabun. All the time they are remembering Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Before we reach you this position, you need to choose to remember. And then you may choose to remember. You may not choose, na'uzu billah. Or you may... I mean, you may choose not to remember, or you may just not choose anything. You are ghafil. Although you wanted, but you didn't choose anything. You didn't make any decision for or against it. For this group, we can call their remembrance of God dhikr, which means to turn towards God by your decision. And this turning is not turning of body, because God is not a physical object. You know, a mirror, I turn the mirror towards light or sun or, you know, an object, there's a flower, this I turn this mirror in front of that so that it's directed towards that flower and reflects that flower. This is physical. In the case of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, Allah is not a physical object, so that by turning my face to Him or my, you know, chest to Him or my body to Him, I can say I have done dhikr. Allah is not a physical object. Even Kaaba, which is our Qibla, is not helping you remember God if just your body is facing Qibla. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has made this Kaaba a point for our orientation of heart. It is reflected in your body facing Qibla, but you should not just turn your body towards Qibla. Allah has no physical direction, no physical, you know, point of reference. He is in Mashriq, He is in Maghrib, He is everywhere if you turn to Him. لِلَّهِ الْمَشْرِقُ وَالْمَغْرِبُ أَيْنَمَا تُوَلُّوا فَثَمَّ وَجْهُ اللَّهِ. But why we have this Kaaba? so that it brings more focus for the individual and for Ummah, so that by facing Kaaba physically, geographically, then we are helped and we are mentally prepared for remembering him by our heart. But if we are just, you know, facing, you know, even if I am, you know, sitting just opposite Kaaba, it doesn't mean that I am remembering God necessarily. So, zikr is turning with your heart to God.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahim Kareem Azim Alim Halim Hakim Mateen.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
U.S. officials in Miami are calling for inspections of all older buildings over six stories within 45 days after the collapse of the Champlain Towers South apartment building that it is now feared to have killed potentially scores of people. Here we present you an article concerning this issue written by Amanda Holpach, under the heading, Miami Condo Collapse, Death Toll Rises to 10 as Search and Rescue Operations Continue. The article was published by The Guardian Daily. Please stay with us to hear more about the details. As the rescue operation in the Miami suburb of Surfside continued, officials urged people to maintain hope survivors might be found in the wreckage of a collapsed condo building. At a briefing, the Miami-Dade County Mayor Daniela Levine Cava announced that a 10th person had been confirmed dead and 151 were still missing. No survivors had been found since Thursday, June 24th, in the ruins of Champlain Tower South, with rescue teams conducting round-the-clock searches. live on Kavaset. They are out there with every resource that they need to ensure they can search this area, adding they can sweep the mound with dogs, with cameras, and sonar. The mayor said 135 residents had been accounted for and that the numbers of deceased and missing people were still very fluid. Andy Alvarez, a deputy incident commander with Miami-Dade Fire Rescue, told ABC on Monday, June 28, rescuers were still hopeful. Alvarez said this is a frantic search to continue to see that hope, that miracle, to see who we can bring out of this building alive. Alvarez said rescue teams found some voids in the wreckage, mostly in the basement and near the parking garage. Alvarez said, we have over 80 rescuers at a time that are breaching the walls that collapse. In a frantic effort to try to rescue those that are still viable and to get to those voids that we typically know exist in these buildings. Alvarez said conditions were not ideal because of humidity, rain, and heat. Alvarez noted, we are holding up because we are holding up for that hope, that faith, that we are going to be able to rescue somebody, adding, we are working tirelessly to try to bring victims that are underneath that rubble and rescue them. The search includes more than 300 emergency personnel, international experts, and equipment, including underground sonar systems. Efforts are also underway to determine the cause of the collapse. Structural engineers have identified several theories, but determining the cause could take months or years. In 2018, an engineer flagged concerns about major structural damage at the tower, but the report did not indicate the building was at risk of collapse. The engineering report dated 8 October 2018 appeared to have been discussed at a board meeting of Champlain Tower South Condominium Association the next month. According to meeting minutes obtained by NPR, at a November meeting, a Surfside building official said the building is in very good shape. The building collapsed at about 1:30 a.m. local time on Thursday, June 24th. No survivors have been found since the first hours following the collapse. Rescuers dug a trench 125 feet long, 20 feet across, and 40 feet deep overnight on Saturday, June 29th, and found remains, but no survivors. Families of the missing traveled by bus on Sunday, June 27th, to a site where they could watch rescue teams dig through the rubble and move large sections with cranes. An official who accompanied the families told the Miami Herald several people yelled the names of their loved ones in the hopes they might hear. Diane O'Hagan, whose parents Miriam and Arnie Nokin were in the building, told the Associated Press, we're just waiting for answers. That's what we want. It's hard to go through these long days and we haven't gotten any answers yet. Alan Kaminsky, chief of the Miami-Dade Fire Rescue Department, emphasized the operation must be slow and careful to protect rescuers as well as any survivors. Kaminsky said that we can't just go in and move things erratically because that's going to have the worst outcome possible. At a White House press briefing on Monday, June 28, the press secretary Jen Psaki said Joe Biden wanted the federal government involved in an investigation of the collapse. Officials from several federal bodies, including the FBI and Occupational Safety and Health Administration, have been deployed to the scene. Psaki said, we want to play any constructive role we can play with federal resources in getting to the bottom of it and preventing it from happening in the future. Surfside has hired a structural engineer, Alan Kushmer, who examined the Pentagon after it was attacked on 9/11 to study the tower collapse and the condition of nearby buildings. According to the town, Kushmer, founder and chief executive of KCE Structural Engineers, has toured the site and saw no visible evidence of any major structural concern. The Champlain Towers North Condominium Association has told the town it will hire its own structural engineering firm to investigate. The latest four victims identified by police were Christina Beatriz Elvira, 74, Leon Olikowitz, 80, Anna Ortiz, 46, and Luis Bermudez, 26. Bermudez lived on seventh floor of the building with his mother, Ortiz. Officials in Miami are calling for inspections of all older buildings over six stories within 45 days after the collapse of Champlain Tower South apartment building. The sudden failure of the building stunned the U.S., happening incredibly quickly and as most of its residents slept. According to CNN, the city of Miami sent letters on Friday, June 25th, to condo associations of 40-plus-year-old buildings above six stories, urging them to get an inspection from a qualified structural engineer within the next 45 days. The letter said, effective immediately, you are strongly urged to retain the services of a licensed structural engineer and to undertake a structural inspection for visible signs of distress. Miami-Dade and Surfside officials have vowed to release all documents relating to Champlain Towers to get to the bottom of what happened, as fires in the rubble have hampered efforts to reach possible survivors. Although the cause of the collapse remains to be unknown, engineering experts interviewed by the Miami Herald have said that, based on available evidence, it appeared that a structural column or concrete slab beneath the pool deck failed, creating a crater into which the midsection of the building collapsed. According to the minutes from a November 2018 board meeting obtained by the Miami Herald, Rosendo Prieto, the chief building official for the town of Surfside, told residents the condominium was in very good shape just a month after an engineer highlighted abandoned cracking in concrete columns, beams, and walls in a field survey report. The 136-unit building erected in 1981 collapsed before a recertification process was completed. But emails released by Surfside also show that Prieto dismissed concerns over potential damage to the building's foundation from a nearby construction project just 2 months after the engineer's report. According to the Washington Post, separately, developers of the complex were accused of contributing to at least two town board members' campaigns to get help with permits during construction in 1981. Champlain Towers were in a partnership with Polish-born Canadian Nathan Raber. According to Ontario's Hamilton Spectator, Raber was charged with tax evasion by Canadian authorities in 1970s. In 1970, faced with a moratorium on construction in Surfside due to sewer system problems, rival developers with stalled projects complained that Raber's Champlain Towers project had received preferential treatment for permits. A year later, developers at Champlain requested that two members of Surfside's town council return political contributions that has been made to them after Raber's rivals went public. Raber died in 2014. Beyond immediate questions about the cause of the Champlain Towers collapse are broader questions of Miami's long beachfront development, often built on reclaimed land or sensitive barrier islands. Reports have identified parts of northeast Miami Beach where the ground has sunk, though experts stress it is far too early to make any meaningful guesses as to the exact cause of the collapse. Shimon Wedowinski, an environment professor at Florida International University, co-authored a paper in April last year that found the building had sunk by about 2 millimeters per year since 1990s. Wedowinski said it came as no surprise given his research last year. He told USA Today, "I looked at it this morning and said, oh my God, we did detect that." A construction executive who has extensive experience building high-rises in New York told The Guardian that everything moves no matter where it is constructed. He said, "Sure, buildings in Florida take a beating from the hurricanes and rain. If corners were cut, they will have to investigate what was in the ground and what kind of foundations was it built on." You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The day of the elections is the day of the Iranian nation, June 18th, 2021. In the name of God, the Beneficent, the Merciful, all praise is due to God, the Lord of the worlds, and may peace and greetings be upon Prophet Muhammad and upon his pure household. The day of the election is the day of Iranian nation. The people are the ones who are controlling what is happening today. It is the people who determine the general and basic course of action in the country for years to come by going to the ballot boxes and casting their votes. This day belongs to the people. Whatever the people do on this day, going to the ballot boxes and casting their votes, will shape their destiny for several years to come. This is exactly why wisdom and reason tell us that everyone should take part in this great national test throughout the country. The reason we repeatedly ask people to participate in the elections is that this participation primarily influences the people. On the other hand, the country and the Islamic Republic of Iran will gain great advantages in the international arena due to the people's participation. But it is the people who primarily benefit from this. Come to the ballot boxes, discern which candidate is best, and cast your vote. This is what is important for the country's future and the future of every single person. Everyone's vote is important. No one should say that their one vote is not effective. Everyone's vote is definitely important. I believe that you should participate with a pure divine intention. It is these single votes that make up the millions of votes of the nation. I believe you should come to the elections with a divine intent, gain divine reward, and do this. I advise you to do this important, necessary action as soon as possible. I always say this. Yes, there are many hours left until the allotted time finishes. But the sooner you do this divine duty and action, the better. I hope God the Almighty gives blessings to your votes by His grace. God willing, you can form a promising future for yourself and every single person in the nation. We hope with the blessing of Imam Rida, peace be upon him, and these days are his days, this will be a day of celebration for the Iranian nation. And this will happen. With God's help, the nation will benefit, God willing. I thank those responsible for conducting the elections. I emphasize that this task be carried out determinedly in all areas of the country. I also say hello to you, honorable journalists and photographers. May God give you strength. May God's peace, mercy, and blessings be upon you.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.